thank everybody for being here. And I'm going to tell you about this piece of work that I did in collaboration with Sylvia Rondon from the Hermiston Experimental Station in Oregon State University. Okay. So this is about the potato tuber worm, which is a Jelekit moth that is a big problem in potatoes. It's kind of a nightmare for potato growers. And the damaging stage is the larvae of this insect. And what they do basically is these nasty things to potatoes, and as you can see there, the tube, they like to make galleries in the tubers, rendering them completely unmarketable. And also they do damage on the leaves, but by mining them, although this has not much commercial importance, but of course, as an ecologist, I am very interested in this, because the way they damage different plants different, and because they do not only attack potatoes, but they also attack other Solanacea plants. But I'm not going to talk about that in this talk. This is just going to be about the population structure. So, like me, this moth came from South America. As you can see there, it was originated, or we believe it was originated, in the Andes. And like me also, it moved from South America to somewhere else. And you can see here where it has been reported almost all over the world, attacking potatoes and being nasty to potato growers. In the US, this is a distribution of the pest. This is where damage has been reported. As you can see, I don't have a pointer, but I think I can use the mouse. Basically, you have an east coast, south central, and west coast distribution. And of course, in the west coast, in what we call the Columbia Basin, we are concerned about this insect, because 67% of the potatoes produced in the US are produced there, in that region. What happened in that region is that normally the numbers of potato tuber worms are relatively low, but in 2004 and 2005, there was an increase in the numbers. Here in the x-axis, you just see the years, and in the y-axis is an index of abundance based on captures in this area. And as you can see, this was the normal level, or what we were expecting, and all of a sudden there was this increase. So people was concerned about this being a potential pest. And you know, when Sylvia or Dr. Rondon told me about this and the concern, the first thing to think as a population geneticist was to say, oh, where are they coming from? And we realized that there was no baseline information on this insect, so we couldn't know. So we tried to know by doing a genetic study, but the intention of doing this was basically to determine the population structure of this insect in the US. And there is a group that is doing this all over the world. They are French, but we were doing it in the US because we wanted to do two things. The first thing was to estimate the potato tuber worm gene flow in the US, because several pests, because human transportation sometimes are panmictic or occur as a huge population in huge areas. And we wanted to know if that was the case, and this was maybe an introduction based due to human reasons, or actually if the population was still structured in some kind of way. And the other one, the second impact that we think our study will have, was to pinpoint the origin of future potential potato tuber worm introductions that we might have. If we have a baseline information, we can fingerprint them and then kind of know from where they came. So we got some money from some federal agency, and then we started doing this. And we use amplified fragment length polymorphisms to test for this, because this is the marker of choice when you know little about the genome of the study organism, and it's relatively affordable, consistent, and cheap. So we analyze them using capillary electrophoresis, as you can see, because it's, we believe, much more reliable. And then we collect samples from the different regions on which the moth occurs in the US, as you can see there. We use pheromone traps to capture males of this insect in these different regions. And unfortunately for us, but fortunately for potato growers, this is what happened in the years we studied. Let me show you this. This is just Oregon, okay? In the y-axis, you see the number of potato tuber moths per trap per week. And here, just different months of 1 year. The different colors represent different years. And as you can see, in 2004 and 2005, which are the years in which people got really concerned, the numbers were relatively high. In the year of our studies, the numbers drop. And because this, what I'm going to show is preliminary data, because we didn't have enough points from different places in order to have the entire picture. In 2008 we did though, and we are analyzing that data to do something that I'm going to tell you at the end. But even with this preliminary data, there was a strong pattern, that's why I'm showing it to you. Before we continue, let me explain you about this. We test for the adequate number of bands and individuals in the study using a method that I developed with some collaborators. It's called SESIM, as it is here. And this method basically, I don't have time to explain how it really works, but what it does basically is tells you that the number of individuals and bands that you have in a particular in a genetic study are enough to be able to rely on the cluster analysis that you get for the scope of the study. So basically, we used 108 individuals and 236 marker bands for this study, and we got a SESIM of 0.027. If you are lower than 0.03, it means that you can rely on the tree or cluster analysis that you generate. And if somebody wants to talk about this, I can explain it at the end, or you can read the paper. But basically, this is just for you to trust in the pattern. And this is the pattern. I'm just going to go to that. This is a neighbor joining tree. In each one of these is an individual. And as you can see here, all the insects or the potato tuber worms from Virginia and Georgia grouped together, all the ones from Oregon grouped together, all the ones from Texas grouped together, which basically is this, just representing the map, which is extremely interesting to us because it shows us that even though the potato tuber worm is a pest of potatoes, which are actually very, very commercially used, they still got some structure that has to do, we believe, with the distribution of these mountains here. We have the Appalachian Mountains and the Rocky Mountains. And the potato tuber worm is not the only insect that have shown this pattern. There are others that have shown that same pattern, like the pecan weevil and the yucca moth. So what we're doing now with the data from 2008 that we collect is trying to see if we can detect microgeographic structure only in the Columbia Basin by using a program called Structure to see if we can zoom in and see if we can detect actually moths not only from those huge three regions but actually from, let's say, micro regions. And I will show you that, I guess, or maybe Sylvia will show you that. Somebody will show you that maybe next ESA. Okay, and I think that with that I will take questions. No potato people? Okay.
Do you expect to find any differences when you look microgeographically between the ones that infect the tubers versus mining the leaves? Those seem like completely different behaviors.
Yeah, that's a study that actually I'm doing in collaboration with North Carolina State, potentially, with my collaborator there. She observed that in tobacco, the potato tuber worm preferred to attack the leaves. In potato, it's the same species but attack the tuber, and we're running some studies to see if we have some kind of host-associated differentiation between these two species, but we don't know yet because we don't even have the, we have the samples from potato, but we need to wait for tobacco or something like that. Yeah, so, but that's a priority that we're gonna do because behaviors differ so much.
Cool. For population dynamics of the tuber worm, the larva overwintering, is that a cost of invasion? Increase numbers of adults year to year?
Actually, Sylvia did a lot of studies on overwintering, and I think she will be more able to answer that than me.
Yeah, these insects in the Columbia Basin overwinter as the pupal stage. We have had mild winters the last couple of years, so that may have contributed to the high numbers in
the
previous years.
In that area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How does the potato tuber worm spread as a tobacco tuber worm in Mississippi State? And usually we have higher numbers when there's a severe drought. So I was wondering if you noticed anything with the climate or the population.
Definitely, the tuber grasses have a huge effect on tuber worm population. We did some studies in our area where we tested different treatments of different irrigation regimes. Normal, above normal, subnormal, and definitely when there's a drought, there's cracks, tubers are exposed. holes, they're more attractive to tubeworm lays and finding it.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.